Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
All right. Hi, guys. Welcome to the Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas, and today we have some amazing authors on our very first Indie Talk segment, which I'm super excited about. We have been waiting to do this for a very long time. So we have EK Kondos here, Kay Peach, and Rebecca Byron. Kay, tell us the title of your book and a little bit about it.
So my book is called Beyond the Maples, and it's a dystopian romantasy, and it's the first of a trilogy. It's about a world where nothing grows naturally anymore, and a young woman has to try and keep her family alive.
Interesting. Okay. And how do you think your book is different than other like fantasy or dystopian books that are out there? Like, what was something when you were writing it that you were like, ooh, this is going to be a little bit different and then hopefully more noticeable?
I think it's a little bit different because it's a real genre blender. I think it has a little bit of everything in it. And I think it's a book for people who grew up and loved like Divergent and Hunger Games and all of those kind of things that want an adult version of that and kind of a more mature perspective. And so, yeah, I always say it's kind of like Mad Max mixed in with like Throne of Glass, and it kind of blends a few different genres, and I think it makes it a little different. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. Okay, and when was your book released?
It was actually just released November 6th. So it's
a brand new baby. Yeah, congrats. Yeah. And this is your first book?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That's amazing.
I pulled that, I was like,
that's really pretty. Like, that is, it's a book that I would have expected to find in a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And that
Jay, I hear, did that one. She's a very good artist. And yeah, she actually paints them and then does the graphics on top, which is pretty cool.
Interesting. Okay. So you went out and you found an artist. Did you meet them online or how did that work?
Yes. Yeah. Instagram has been my like go-to. I don't know about you ladies, but I like, that's how I network and find all of my like editors, everything. So it's been a game changer for me, for sure.
Yeah, that's amazing. And Rebecca, tell us a little bit about your book, A Memory Not Mine.
Yeah, thanks. It's A Memory Not Mine. It was released in September of this year. And it's about Mira Garvey. She's an unwilling clairvoyant, has clairvoyance in her family, but she's really never kind of embraced that side of her personality. And she inherits a portrait. She touches it, unleashes some really intense emotions and visions of a distant relative, Agnes Garvey. And that kind of drives her to the Scottish Highlands to find out more about Agnes. But really in the process, she's learning that she has to embrace who she is to do that. There's vampire, you know, there's a brooding guardian type, and I don't, there's a lot of mystery involved, but really the overarching themes in the book are grief and loss and how we deal with those things, and the redemptive power of love, even mm-hmm. with people maybe who've done some bad things in the past, and then ultimately yeah. also embracing who you are. And so that's a lesson that my main character Mira has to learn.
Amazing. Okay. And then I want to ask you the same question too that I had asked Kay as well. When you were writing your book, what was one thing that you were like you had in your mind that you were like, I want this to be a little bit different than other like fantasy, romantic, like vampire kind of things? What was one thing you wanted to be a little bit different?
Yeah, kind of like Kay. So I write a genre blend. I'm like, don't tell me to stay in my lane because that's just boring. I don't like to read stories like that. And so I didn't want to write a story like that. But that actually makes it kind of hard to market your book. I have learned that's one of the indie lessons. When I was thinking about writing this, well, I'll go back to before I started, actually typing out 40,000 words, which was kind of the start of this. I had gone down this Kindle Unlimited rabbit hole. I've loved vampires since I was a toddler for some reason, never lost my love of vampires. And I could not find the vampire novel that I wanted to read. A lot of vampire novels are very heavy world building, a lot of vampire politics, clan wars, stuff like that. I wasn't interested in that. I read a lot of really good vampire stories, but that's just, it wasn't what I was looking for at the time. I'm a dedicated romance fan. And so I wanted this to lean heavily romance, and it does. And so I really wrote about people, and some of the people happened to have, gotten turned into vampires, but they are who they are. And I kind of think in my fantasy world that when you become a vampire, you're still you, just maybe a bigger version of that, more intense version of that. And so I kind of wanted to lean into that. But, at its heart, it's definitely a romance.
Okay, interesting. So that was it. You both have used a term that I have not heard before and I'm not really used to. So it's like genre blending. So can you give me a breakdown, and for our listeners as well, or again, maybe someone who's going into the industry or trying to become an author, what does it mean to actually genre blend, and how do you do that and then work past getting your book labeled in a specific genre, or can your book be labeled in two genres?
I don't know, Kate, do you want to handle that? Because I will talk about all the struggles I've had, but I'm not sure I know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know either, because I'm so new to this industry. I feel like that's a tough one. But I think a genre blend is typically like you have these very specific tropes for each genre, right? And so you have your fae with your mates and your all that kind of stuff, and then you have your dystopian with your kind of like big world government corruption and all that kind of stuff. And so I think a typical genre blend is just kind of melding those tropes and trying to do it in a fluid way that the readers are like, oh, I recognize this, but it's a little different than normal, and kind of, yeah, people connect with that, hopefully.
Right.
When I started writing, I found an editor on Readzy. I don't know if anybody knows about the Readzy platform, but it's kind of an industry platform where you can create a project and go look for developmental editors, coaches, copy editors, proofreaders, marketing, cover design, all that stuff. And so I found an editor. She's actually a published author. She's written 50 romance and thrillers under two different pen names. But she's also worked as a developmental editor with some of the biggest names in romance, Megan Quinn and Sierra Simone and Laurel and Page. So like I felt like I found the right person to help me. And she read my first draft and she's like, lady, you write like a historical fiction author, but this is a paranormal romance. And that readership has some very defined expectations. And so you're going to have to meet those expectations. You can still be you in how you approach the story. But to make your book marketable, there are things you're going to have to consider and maybe retool in the book. And so that was fantastic advice. I still feel like there's a bit of historical fiction. I do a lot of research about period research, and so there's a lot of that in my book. And so, but like a lot of the books I like are blends. Outlander is one of my favorite books. It is a paranormal romance. It is a time travel romance, but it is, I mean, there is so much historical fiction and historical romance in that book. And so I know that they can work. Anne Rice also, vampires, but tons and tons of research about the period that she's writing about, and she weaves in, you know, actual factual events. And so that's kind of the stuff that I love to read. And so that's my writing very much kind of goes down that path.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love that you are going the direction that you love. Of course, I feel like if you were writing in a genre that you weren't super into reading, I feel like that would, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not an author by any means, I'm not a writer by any means, but I feel like that would make it a lot more difficult.
I don't think I could do it. I mean, if somebody said, hey, I want you to write, I don't even know, like, I can't even, like, just throw something at me. I would go, I have no interest in that. So that I have no passion that I can, like, put into that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And Emily, tell us about your book, A Wrecking of Salt and Fire. Yeah. This is, so we have pirates.
I like to think of it as like a mix between Pirates of the Caribbean and the Iliad. So it's a new take on Greek mythology. It is not what we know as Greek mythology right now, although we do see some of the same characters come through. So A Wrecking of Salt and Fire is the first book in a trilogy, and there's also three novellas that go with it. The first one, Swift as the Rising Tide, actually comes out December 2nd. So very soon.
Which really is a great day, oh my gosh, because that's my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Even in the unboxing video that I have ready to post when this comes out, I'm like, it's a great day because that's my birthday. So everyone should remember that book is coming out that day.
I'm super excited about it. That one actually follows two side characters that we meet in book one and book two. And I wasn't originally going to do the novellas until after I wrote book one. People kept asking, like, hey, we want to know more about, like, these two characters, and decided that I would give them side quests. So it picks up around, like, chapter 36 or something like that in book two, and picks up exactly like you were writing a chapter 37, but in their point of view instead. So I'm really excited for it to come out. But yeah, pretty much if you like Greek mythology, but you don't want to read a true retelling, which is a lot of, I think, what we see right now with Greek-inspired fantasy. I love it. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely adore that. But I wanted something a little bit different. And I'm a huge Pirates of the Caribbean buff. So I thought, why not bring some high seas adventure to romantasy?
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think that answers my question that I would ask is, like, how is your book a little bit different than, like, other, you know, Greek mythology or pirate romances? So that's incredible. Three amazing, awesome, awesome books. So I want to jump into some questions, because we know that there are a lot of good things, right, in being an indie author, but there are also some struggles, right? So there's some indies highs and lows. Because you pay for this out of your own pocket. You design all of this yourself. You write it all yourself, right? So everything that you do is on your timeline and your budget. There's not someone out there, like, fighting for you and pushing for your book to go out. Like, it's on your shoulders. So I can imagine that is incredibly stressful, but also incredibly rewarding. So I want to talk about two specific things today to help other indie authors in the future. The first one is deadlines. So when I see, like, a traditionally published author online, they talk about, like, oh, they have deadlines, or they've been writing for a deadline because there's someone waiting on their paper. So what does a deadline mean to you guys as an indie author? Like, so what does, do you make it yourself? Is there actually someone waiting on that paperwork or that chapter or that finished book. So, Emily, let's go ahead and start with you.
Yeah, what is, so what actually, my husband gets mad at me a lot of times about this very question, because I'm always sitting like on the weekend in my office saying, oh, I have a deadline coming up, like I need to meet this. And he's like, honey, you set your own deadlines. Like you don't need to, you could always push it out. But I think for me, I'm a very organized person, and I have to be if I'm gonna try to get anything done. Mm-hmm. So I actually create like a lucid chart. I don't know if people know what that is, but it's a little online diagram system that I use in data science and like my 9-to-5 job, and go through, and pretty much from now through 2027, I have all my deadlines set for when I need to finish like my first draft, my alpha readers, my beta readers, when it goes to my editor. I think a big thing for indies with deadlines is there's a lot of people out there that can help you. But if you find certain editors or certain cover artists that you really like working with, like I work with the same two people for all my books, they book so far out in advance that to get on their books, you almost do have to create this mm-hmm. own deadline for yourself, like you're working with a traditional publisher. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you might not get the person that you either vibe really well with or want to work with. So you are a little bit beholden to that as well. For myself also, I have technically not a, I am self-published, but from the audiobook side, I work with Podium, and I've come and I have dates I have to hit to send them my manuscripts. So it's mm-hmm. flexible. Like I could go to them and say, hey, could we push this out a month? But you still have a little bit of that there. And maybe next time I'll give myself a little bit more space in between books. But it's definitely helpful to, I think, even yourself, just write them down and try to stick to them. Yeah. Like it was a traditional publishing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's a good thing, right? Because it's good to be in the habit of that, because one day you might get an email or a phone call from a publisher, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you are a traditional author, and they're like, hey, by the way, here's a deadline. So you're already in the habit of doing it, and I could imagine it might be a little bit less stressful to go up that approach. Rebecca, how do you feel about deadlines? How do you set up that for yourself and your schedule?
Yeah, my experience was a lot like hers. you know, I'm a little bit of that, one of those ADD people. So when I get something, like I dive deep into it. Mm-hmm. And you know, before I even found my developmental editor, I had 40,000 words written, and that was probably in a 4-week period. Like every single wow. second that I had, that I wasn't working my 9-to-5 job or doing family stuff or sleeping, I was writing. But when I found my developmental editor, it was very similar. She's a published officer. She had just finished a book, so she was in post-production. And she had a window where she could work with me. And so I had to fit myself into her schedule, and it worked out great because I was super motivated. And, like, she was fantastic. I would turn over, you know, usually about 25,000 words to her. She'd take about a week, read it over, provide comments, you know, call BS on some sections. She's like, no, these two paragraphs not working at all. Or, you know, this is fantastic. I love this, you know, keep this vibe going. So we worked really well together, but, had I had the luxury of a lot more time, I don't know that I would have done it a whole lot differently. I will say now, mm-hmm. writing book two, it's very different, because a lot of my extra time that I feel like I should be writing, I'm working on marketing my book. And if I had to like stack rank the things I'm good at, that's really at the bottom. And so it creates a big kind of an energy drain for me sometimes. And I find myself, you know, very involved in that when I could be off writing, and honestly, writing brings me a lot of joy. And brightness in my day. So I have to be super disciplined. I'm 63,000 words into book two. Kind of think it's gonna, I don't know, I kind of think it's gonna end up about 90,000 words. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like 2/3 of the way done. But I also have committed now to kind of a target date for book two, which should be in the spring. And hopefully if I stay on track, arcs maybe in February. But those are self-imposed deadlines. But also it's something out there that I'm working to. If I hadn't, you know, thrown those out, I'm not sure that I would be as dedicated and, you know, trying to find the time to write and do the marketing and all that kind of stuff that, you know, takes up indie author's time.
Yeah. Yeah. Marketing is something I would like to go into in this episode as well, because I think there's a lot more good that goes into that than a lot of people see.
And hey, I have one from you guys.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going to share advice. We're going to learn lots of things. So I feel like even from the podcasting side, the marketing of it is a lot, right? Like creating, you guys have to create your posts and share them and then send out your arcs and then listen to, like, look at reviews and that kind of stuff too. So like, it's to create the shorts and post the photos and edit the videos and add the voiceovers. And it takes a lot more time than I would have anticipated. So when I'm like, oh, I should be writing my episode now, I should be writing these next chapters, it's, oh, well, actually, I haven't posted anything in 24 hours. I need to go make something, finish it, and post it so we can keep interest in our page. So I feel like it's a weird cycle that you have to go through, and you have to make sure that you're balancing it correctly. So Kay, how do you do your deadlines? Is it about the same as the other gals, or do you do yours a little differently?
Yeah, it's pretty similar, actually. I think I also use my editors and stuff to hold me accountable for, you know, like Emily said, if you have a specific editor that you really want and they're usually booking 4 months out, you got to make sure your manuscript is ready for them at that time. Mm-hmm. So I think that holds me accountable. And much like Rebecca, I'm a little bit more an ADHD kind of gal. So spreadsheets are not always on par with what we're doing. But I really love writing, so that piece isn't always the hardest part. It's usually the deadlines for like making sure that I'm keeping up with my marketing and all of the other pieces of the indie stuff. Like Rebecca was saying, the actual writing brings me a lot of joy, so keeping up with those deadlines kind of make me happy. So those are always a little bit easier to follow. But it's the other pieces that kind of make the rest slide a little bit sometimes. So
And Kay, speaking of going into the marketing stuff, is there some sort of advice that you would give, you know, other indie authors or people trying to become an indie author on how to successfully market their book on social media without absolutely losing their minds?
Oh, that's a tough one. I will say I have lost my mind a few times on this journey already. staying consistent is really, really important. As you guys all know, it's one of the hardest things to do. I'm actually, you know, sliding off that right now a little bit as I dive really heavily into the writing piece of my second book. But definitely having a game plan and then sometimes utilizing people like PAs and that kind of stuff and just kind of working with other people within the industry has been really helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Staying with kind of those trends and making sure you're communicating with other book accounts, building a community within that has really been helpful for me. So I don't know about you guys, if you guys have done something similar. I was thankful to have been on Instagram for a year or so before I sort of switched off to the author piece. So I kind of got a good feel of how things were going. It always kind of amazes me how different each platform is, though. What works on TikTok does not work on Instagram.
And the sizes are different. That always gets me, because I make something that's like perfect and I go to Instagram and it posts, and I go to TikTok and it says, oh, actually this doesn't fit here. And you're, cool.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. I only worked for 2 hours on this post.
Yeah.
Rebecca, what do you have? Because I know that you had mentioned like the struggles of marketing and social media. What would you, is there like a piece of advice you would give, or is there something that you learned along the way that made your marketing life a little bit easier?
Well, you know, I talked about my developmental editor, and, you know, when I started that journey with her, she asked me, she's like, are you going to, you know, try and be traditionally published, or are you going to be indie? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I can write this book, but I don't think I can market this book. And she was like, you absolutely can. And so when we were done with my book, she kind of transitioned into a mentor for me. that gave me a little bit of a roadmap and told me where to go for resources and ideas and things like that. Unlike Kay, I did not have an Instagram presence before I started writing the book. And so it released in September. I created my author account mid-June. And so I worked very, very hard once the book got done to try and create a follower base that I hope would be interested in my book. Now, that's one thing that I've learned. Followers don't necessarily translate into readers and or buyers. And so one of the things I think we all struggle with is how do we market to find the person who is the ideal reader for your book? I don't have the answers. Like I will say probably a lot of what I've done has been like throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks, seeing what works. I honestly tell everybody, like, the universe wanted me to write this book. And the universe helped me every step of the way. And I found somebody who was super supportive, and she ended up being my PA. And I call her my super cheerful weapon of mass persistence, because she's the one who's doing a lot of the outreach for me. That's super draining for me. I'm an introvert. So leveraging her has been super helpful. You know, but I did all the normal things, you know, a cover reveal, you know, trying to create reels that gave potential followers and then hopefully potential readers a sense for what my book was about. Some of those I did really well. Some of them, you know, fell flat. And that's kind of the spaghetti thing. You just don't know what's going to resonate and what's not. So it's hard. I ended up taking a piece of advice from my editor. She's like, you know, used to be like a career launcher for indies. And she said, you need to try and get a feature deal. And she said, you know, when I started, I applied, because you have to apply for it, three times and got turned down, and I got accepted on my fourth application. And I applied 2 weeks after I released, and I got accepted. And so, like, that was something. It was the deal actually started October 7th. And I had 10,000 downloads in that 5-day period. And if there was anything that helped me get broader exposure, it was that event. Now, I didn't make any money off of that, but it got my book into people's hands who might not otherwise read it. And so that was really helpful. And so I also, like a lot of us now, have kind of created a little small community of other authors that I talk to. And that was what I went to them with. And I'm like, just go try this, because it can help you get some exposure that either your efforts on social media aren't doing, or it's going to augment those efforts and reinforce those efforts. You know, I've spent time in my 9-to-5 job kind of in sales support. My whole career, I would say, has been writing adjacent. And a lot of times what we do is, you know, like, tell a story to do whatever it is we're doing. And so this is like telling a story, but, you know, it was a great opportunity, and I think it was important for me. And so sharing that knowledge to me, you know, I'm not a gatekeeper. I want everybody to know what I've learned and what I've tried that hasn't worked for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have a good relationship now with your PA, and she is incredible. Yes.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
If anyone needs a PA, I'm going to put it into the ether. She, her schedule might be full, but she is worth it. I don't know what her schedule looks like, but.
I had two indie bookstores that, like, I was committed, like, by God, I am going to get my book, because they're both local. And, you know, I started getting success with, you know, indie bookstores in Canada and the United Kingdom other places. Could not get these people even to talk to me. But I turned her loose on them. And eventually, I think they just said, God, ladies, stop emailing us. All right, fine, we'll hear your book.
Yes.
Yes.
You can't say no to her. She's so nice.
No, you cannot.
You'll feel terrible forever.
No, what she hears is not now.
Yeah, she's, I'll check back in a little bit then. Yes, 100%. Yeah, I feel like everyone's marketing journey and social media journey has been a little bit different. And I think I found each of you a very different way than the next. So like Emily, like your social media found my page, like my For You page. And I was like, who is this author? And I even had to look because I thought you were a traditionally published author.
Well, thank you.
Like looking at your page, I was like, who is it? I've never heard of this book. What is happening here? So I found each of you like a very, I found you like through your PA, like online, the social media. So tell me about your media journey. Cause you even posed a question online that I thought was really interesting that I hadn't seen where you said, what do you guys want in your PR boxes? And I said, I've never heard anyone ask that before. Usually they just put stuff in there and people go and then they open them. So tell me a little bit about your journey.
I guess sort of in between the other two ladies on the call, I didn't have a social media presence other than like my personal account, which is very private from college. And I started my Instagram account for A Wrecking of Salt and Fire maybe 6 months or so before the release, 7 months before the release. And I knew absolutely nothing about publishing a book other than what I read online and how to market a book. I'm not in marketing. I'm in data science. Like I'm a nerd. I'm at my computer with my Python code. I'm aesthetic in the sense that like I color coordinate my closet, but I didn't really know how to like tie, especially now, all my books together. So they're all different colors. They're by the same cover artist. They have the same theme, but one's green, one's red, one's blue. I'm coming out with a contemporary romance. And I was doing something really similar to Rebecca, where like throwing spaghetti at the wall, trying to figure out what sticks. And I started working with my PA, and bless her, she is like a mastermind of color coordination. And I think that really helped me. I know obviously when you're starting out as an indie, you don't really have the money to have a PA. I think a lot of times people think they have to do it all at once and they have to figure it out all at once. And I spent like 2 years not doing that and really just seeing, okay, what are the trends that other people are looking at? Would that help? Oh, I see people are doing really well with character art. Like, can I invest in a newer artist that's trying to work out their portfolio so it's a little bit less expensive, or do some sort of long-term deal with them where I can get more out of it? And then I do every once in a while, I haven't been posting as many reels as I used to. But it used to be kind of a series of like, what do people want to see from me and really go out and ask the community. And so I think that's where the PR box came out. I know a lot of trad publishing houses do physical PR boxes. It is a huge investment for us as indie authors. And I've sent out smaller packages before with just the book and some stickers because it, you know, it is more economical for us. We're trying to squeeze together every penny that we got to, you know, share our books with everyone. Yeah. And I wanted to know that if I was putting in this kind of investment, like, is it going to be what people want? So I went out and asked the community, I'm like, hey, what's the type of things that you guys love that you're seeing from other authors come in? Is there anything like I can hand make? Is there certain things I should order? Do I actually invest in the pretty printed boxes? Or like, is it fine if I just have the little black box that I got off of Amazon? And kind of taking in all of that feedback. And that's kind of, I feel like, where a lot of my marketing just comes from, is like being in my stories and talking to other bookstagrammers and other authors and seeing what works for them. And am I able to do my own little spin on it and see if it works for me? And it's definitely come a long way. I like, don't scroll too far back on my page. It's not very good. A lot of Canva trial and error. But I think the biggest thing is in marketing for indie authors, and like what I saw when I started, really was trying to compare myself to someone like, say, Carissa Broadbent or Megan Quinn. Like I also write contemporary, so she's like a huge idol of mine. And you think that this like one book where they started was their big break and like, I need to jump in and I need to market that way because I want to be like that person. Like I'm inspired by that person. And you don't see the 10 books they published before and all the trial and error they had to do and all like the hustle really of it and the events they had to go to and bookstores they had to cold call. And you don't see the behind the scenes of those. You just see their success right now. And it was something I really had to get used to, especially in the marketing. Like it's okay to fail and it's okay to try and try and try again and then have something go viral and then see your numbers cascade off to nothing and it's fine. It'll happen. It comes in ebbs and flows as the years go on and slowly those ebbs and flows start to kind of pick up a little bit where you're not, you know, going down to nothing and you can only hope for the best. But it's a lot.
Now I want to know what's in your PR box.
Yeah, what did they say? What was the feedback that you received from your followers?
Yeah, so I was actually kind of surprised because I thought people would want, I don't know, like bigger items or more interesting things. But most of the time it's like art, character art, theme stickers, bookmarks, like the tab. So I actually worked with someone at the Tabbery to do a custom tab page with the colors of the cover of Swift. And like glassware. Yeah, she was awesome. Oh,
what does that mean? What is the tab?
Like the little annotation tabs.
Like the little sticky notes that people put.
Like custom one. Oh, that's cute. That's
then,
a good idea.
Like glassware. Mm-hmm. So I got off of Amazon. Yeah. So I have a Cricut. It's actually behind me somewhere. I hope you guys can't see it. But I got glassware on Amazon. The iced coffee mugs that have the little bamboo top, and then on my Cricut, I still need to do it. But
those are so
just
cute.
Like print out some vinyl to put on there that's themed, and that was one of the most requested, I would say, is glassware, like a coffee mug or an iced coffee mug or a water bottle or something that they can take around with them that makes them feel, you know, like they're connected more to the world of the Nose Dose series. And then obviously people said like t-shirts, hats and stuff, but that's a little more complicated because you have to get sizes and communicate with people. Yeah. One thing, and I don't know if you guys have advice on this or not, is like, I'm still unsure if I'm going to let everyone know in advance if they're getting one or have it be like a surprise at the door. Because I'm someone that loves surprises. I asked my husband, he's terrible. He's super bookish. And he's like, I hate surprises. I would want to know in the beginning. But that's still something I think I'm working on seeing is, you know, you see a lot on threads and Instagram and TikTok, people showing, oh, I'm getting this from Simon & Schuster in the mail. I wonder what it is. And it's kind of this excitement. So I think I'm leaning towards that, but we'll see.
I did a little bit of a mix of both with my PR boxes. And I loved what you said, Emily, about like doing too much at once, because I definitely did that.
Oh, yeah.
I had these like very beautiful, overly curated PR boxes that were gorgeous, but definitely, yeah, it took a lot of time, effort, money, and I sent them out. I did a combination of what you were saying. Some people got surprises, but then some of the bigger influencers and stuff like that, you do have to kind of like ask permission or like see what their, you know, availability is like. So for those guys, I reached out and just kind of asked what they preferred, if they would like one, that kind of stuff. So less of a surprise, but still appreciated.
Yeah, I haven't done any surprises. So, you know, if somebody goes, yeah, I'd love to read your book, I'm like, great, I'm going to send you a signed copy. And I've done like bookmarks.
That's smart.
And those have been really well received. But I did some stickers. And I had them printed by Canva, and they were round stickers, but they came in the sheet. So I was like cutting out paper dolls, and they looked super like not professional. So I ended up going back to the drawing board, coming up with some new designs, and had die cut stickers printed with sticky
needle,
and they're really nice. And I've gotten like lots of fantastic feedback, and they're not overly expensive. But no, I haven't sent surprise packages out, but I actually had another author that I'm doing a giveaway with next month. She asked me that question yesterday. Do you surprise people and just like blind send them stuff? And I'm like, I haven't done that. Do you do that? So I guess that's something, you know, I'm learning. Maybe I need to start doing that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I can see it both ways. I can see it as like they want to know if the package is coming, but I can see that it would also be fun if you already have their address and you know that things will get there safely. If they're like if I went to my PO box today and there's a surprise package, I mean, you can't say no to that, right? Yeah. Like, you can't be mad at it. Yeah, yeah, no, I love that. One that I use is Jiffy.com, like Jiffy.
Yeah,
because all of our Goodish Girls merch, I make myself. So I like design it myself. I have the sweatshirts at home. I like iron them on with my little heat press. But I don't have like, there's the Cricut is like hit and miss for me. It's very user error. It's me. It's my bad. So I found a really good prices on Jiffy. Yeah, exactly. And Rebecca, you might in the future like this too, if you ever need a different website, is that you can pay an extra just a smidge and they will pre-cut everything for you.
Oh, cool.
So like pre-cut your stickers. So I got like vinyl stickers to put onto glassware, like the vinyl cutouts for like sweatshirts, t-shirts, stickers, things like that. So the merch side is hard.
Yeah.
It's a weird place to try and get into. And I'm like trying to like design these logos and do all these things. And I'm like, I just want to write my episodes. But
so I'm working I think on a weird merch. And this was Evelyn's idea, but I'll talk about it. So there's this perfume company called Heretic Perfumes, and they make fantastic perfumes. I wear one called Dirty Peach. Love it. And they did a collab for the vampire movie Nosferatu. And I'm like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
There's a perfume collab. So Evelyn goes, you have to do a perfume collab. And I'm like, she goes, wouldn't that be awesome? And I'm like, I just happen to know a Penn State student, son of a friend of mine, who started a perfume company. And he just got a government grant, and I like called her up. I'm like, I need to talk to your son. I have a collab idea. So he's working on two fragrances, and potentially those would go in PR boxes if this whole thing.
Yeah, that is what you surprise people with. Cool. Like you send them a package. There's perfume in it.
It might not be a surprise. Yes. You know, anybody who's watching this would be like, ah, Rebecca, the next box I expect perfume.
Yeah, I actually. Yeah, hello, Rebecca. I would like to RSVP for that perfume. Yeah, that's incredible. And I love that it's a little bit different and unique and something that, you know, we don't always see, especially in like a PR box or like a book package, things like that. So that's very interesting. I love that you each have like something different and unique that's in your boxes. That's incredible. You guys are doing great. Everyone's social media looks really well. I personally looked at all of them, I swear. So I found you guys. So you guys are all doing well. I see you guys on my newsfeed. I see you guys out there hustling. And I think it is paying off. People in your comments seem to be really engaging with you guys. You guys are really engaging with them, which I think is really important. I think that, and obviously, again, not an author. Correct me if I am wrong, but I think sometimes it's, if you don't engage with them, you never really build that connection, right? So like if you're in there and you're talking to them on the other side as just a book reader or just a general book talker, I'm like, whoa, oh my gosh, the author responded to me. Like, that's amazing. They took time out of their day, out of their writing, out of their schedule, out of their deadlines to really read my comment and think my opinion and then respond to it. So it seems small, but I think it really goes a long way.
A lesson I learned recently, because I have dubbed myself a promiscuous follower, because I was out there like following people, and I hit... Last week, I hit the 7,500 limit. And so I've now gone through and I'm comparing my followers and my following list. And you know what I was doing? I was seeing all these people that I was following in my feeds and I was engaging with them. They didn't follow me. And so now that I've fixed that, now I'm engaging with the people who actually follow me. That's where I'm spending my time. But it's unless you like think about it that way, it's so easy to end up spending time on social media and it's not helping build your brand. It's not helping you engage. So that one's a recent lesson that I learned from the promiscuous follower.
The promiscuous, that's a, wow. Hashtag promiscuous follower. I have never heard that, and I love it.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really agree with what you said about, like, the people in the book community really acknowledging and I think recognizing when authors are interacting. Like, I remember when I was just posting reviews and kind of book stuff, anything that an author would come on and comment or share, I remember, and I was like a lifetime like follower of that person. So mm-hmm. I think it means a lot, and I think you're never too big or too small to do that. I think you should always be interacting with everybody and making sure people feel appreciated and seen, and so that's always a big goal of mine.
That's like a key piece of advice, it seems like, from all three of you. Yeah, is engage with your followers, engage with your readers, engage with people online. And I don't necessarily mean like the negative stuff, but I feel like the BookTok community is...
Don't do that.
It's a little wild out there. Be careful on what you say. But yes, I feel like the BookTok community overall, 98% of it is such a positive space and an uplifting space.
Yeah.
And I think people, if you are on there and you're working, people are going to see you and they're going to acknowledge that. Yeah, totally. 100%. So I have some questions for each one of you. So Emily, we'll start with you. My question for you is, what is, and if you don't want to say, that's okay. But I think that this is a place where we can learn and grow. And I'll tell you my mistakes too. But like, what is one mistake that you made as an indie author that you wish you could go back? Like, I have, like, did you post the wrong chapter? Or did you, you know, what is something that you did that you were like, oh man, I wish indie authors knew this so they don't, they don't make that same mistake.
This is going to be a really embarrassing one. It was more recent. So my second book just came out in August, and I had my files uploaded probably from July 1st, because that's when I had to send my manuscript over to Podium. And when I go through, I format an Atticus, and my editor did her last proofread, and I copied all my stuff over into Atticus. I did not look at the export of the file. And my lovely street team always, one of the girls bought the book right away. She gets it from Amazon and she looks in it and she's like, hey, did you delete chapter 3? I was like, I don't think so. And she's like, 'cause it was in the arc, but it just says chapter 3 header. Like, is that a, did you do that for tension or what? Oh. And I said no, freaked out, checked my home copies, my author copies of them. And for some reason, the paperback copy is printed without the third chapter. But the hardback copies, which comes from the same thing, had it, and I had printed 100 copies for my event that I had at my local Barnes & Noble for the release. So my advice, and one of the biggest mistakes I probably made, was not reviewing the actual final PDF. So I went through all the chapters within the formatting thing, but not that actual last version of it that I uploaded. So always, always, always do that. Luckily, people are awesome. I only had one person send me a pretty mean DM about it. But otherwise, everyone, I put it up on my website. No one really seemed to care. I put a little QR sticker on, like, in each of the physical copies to be like, hey, go to my website. Here's the third chapter that's missing. It wasn't an important chapter. you didn't really find anything out, but it was kind of like don't do that again. And now I check like 15 times through everything, especially with this latest release. So that would be, you know, my big mistake that I made.
Now, one day when you are a traditionally published author and they eventually like stop the printing of the books you have and they start the new printing, right, Everyone's going, well, I
the weird,
have
the weird original.
So, I have the cool, like, misprint.
One can dream.
Exactly. Years from now, they're going to be like, well, guess what I have
on
my show?
The cover still looks the same. It's still pretty.
Yeah. And I love, and you, and it seems like you did everything you could to make it right. So it's, you know, I think it can see that you did your best, and it just kind of reminds us that we all are human. And again, you guys have 9 to 5s before your 5 to 9 and your weekends and your all the time that you guys put into this. So like, nobody's perfect. I make mistakes on this side of our podcast all the time. And everyone's like, hey, you got this wrong. Or hey, you did this wrong. Or hey, this is, or I realized that I got it wrong on my own. I had to, one rule that I had to set for myself and my mental health was, once I go to bed, I don't check my phone until the next morning. So even if I get up with my son, even if I'm like awake and I can't sleep, I cannot check my phone, because sometimes there's awesome stuff on there, sometimes there's nothing, and then sometimes there's bad stuff on there. So it, because otherwise I can never go back to sleep. And I started stressing about it through the night. So like, that's a rule for like me in general. So I don't know if anyone can relate to that, or if it's just like a me thing, but it became very important to me to not do that.
Yeah. I don't, but that's a great piece of advice.
Once you go to bed, like there is nothing on there that cannot wait until 7 a.m. the next morning.
Totally.
If it's an emergency, they'll call you. Yeah, exactly. Somebody will call you if they need you.
Good night.
Nothing on social media is going to light on fire overnight. So Rebecca, I have a question for you. If you were talking to a brand new, just getting started, one word on their page, indie author, what would you say to them? Like, what is, if you could give them one piece of advice to take with them on their journey?
Yeah, I would give somebody the same advice that my best friend gave me. She's a nonfiction author. And she's the first person, before I even told my husband, she was the one I said, hey, I think I could write a book. And she said, we're on the phone, I'm going to hang up right now. I want you to go upstairs. She knew where my office was. She's like, I just want you to write. Just start writing. She's like, and I want you to get, and I don't want you to stop until you get to 10,000 words. And then I want you to check in with yourself. And if it was fun, if it was joyful, you loved it, this is for you, and you need to stick with it, you know. But if you get to 10,000 words and you're like, kind of sucked, or you know, this, I don't know, this was hard, she's like, you know, then you know. But you've given it a shot. And I think I've had these thoughts at different points in my life. I entertained being a romance author when I was 19, and I, like, you know, wrote on lined notebook paper and dotted my I's with hearts, you know, like teenagers do. And I wrote 3 pages back and forth, and it was crap, and I tossed it. But I didn't really give it a shot. And so it was like the universe was giving me permission to go try something new. Universe doesn't need to give anybody permission to go try something new. And you may suck at it. That's okay. But if you love it, it is something that is for you, and you should invest your time and your energy in. And I don't think about that little push that day, I'm not sure this book would, I would be here talking to you today. So for anybody who's like just noodling on, maybe I could do this, just go try it.
Yeah. Go to your office, go to your computer, go sit at a Starbucks, whatever you need to do, just, or pen and paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just start. Just give it a shot.
I had an Atticus nightmare though, Emily, too. And like, similar. Luckily, my art readers caught it, and I had a chance to fix it before it got released. But it was
funny because it wasn't in the arc, and then it was, and I was just like, "Oh, it's miserable." Always happens.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness for that person that messaged you and was like, "Hey, this is like this is missing." Hey, so that's really, I think that was thoughtful of them, instead of being like, "Oh, I shouldn't say anything. I'll just move on." Right? Like, I don't want to bother her. So I think that was good on them for telling you that on that other person message you. They can go away. We won't name them. So Kay, one question that I have for you is, now that you are in the indie author world, if you could change one thing, like it can be anything that you want, if you could change one thing in the indie author world, what would it be?
I think like that I've done, or just within the world.
Whatever you choose. Yeah. If you're like, man, I wish this one thing was different, or it, like, if I could have it my way, it would look like this instead. Whether it's the process or how you get to, like, whatever you think.
I think that from my own journey, before I published, I would have made more indie author friends. That has been kind of like the biggest, I think, help and aid in this whole journey. And I wish I had made them earlier, so that I had someone to like ask about Atticus, like, why are there like tiny boxes showing up on my fonts? Like, all of that kind of stuff that just occurs and you're just kind of like screaming into the void and like Googling things. I think that community has been so, so important. And once you find kind of a couple people who are willing to give you advice and, you know, cheer you on and support you just kind of like free of charge, right? Like there's no strings attached. That is something that I would change in my own personal journey and just like encourage other people to try and do that as they go along their first books.
And where as an indie author could someone start to find those friends? Like, is there like a group page or like where would you go to start and be like, hi, my name is so-and-so and I'm about to write a book, please help me?
For me, it was definitely Instagram again. I've heard lots of people have had success with Threads. I don't know about you ladies, but Threads is like scary for me. I'm on there a little bit, but I try, but I've heard lots of other indie authors really love it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Does anyone have like a place where they would go if they could go back and try and start again?
I tried joining a Discord server for authors.
Oh,
and okay. I'm too old for that. So like, I couldn't figure it out. I was struggling and I was not getting any help. So I've found people on Instagram. And Evelyn, my PA, she's so good at bringing people together. Like she's like, hey, 10 indie authors, I'm putting you together. Here's a chat, talk amongst yourselves. And I developed friends that way and like literally talk to them on a daily basis when I have problems or questions now.
I think for me it was, so Emily, I did a smaller book event last April, and it's funny because sometimes you don't think you're making friends. I was always like really like more not a shy person because I'm very outgoing, but it was hard for me to actually make like legitimate friendship connections with people growing up. So you always think like, oh, does this person like me? Do they not like me? And when I actually went to the event, I realized that kind of those smaller interactions, just like starting with commenting on people's posts and then, you know, you have an occasional DM or something, starts to slowly snowball into, oh, now I chat with this person regularly and I can yap about like weird things with them on the side or ask advice and it's not awkward anymore. And I think the event I went to, there was probably less than 40 maybe authors there, and just being able to interact with them throughout the day was really awesome and kind of then helped to make connections that stuck with me afterwards. And I also think through like my PA as well, she has a really good client list, and I actually found my PA through an author friend of mine, and just kind of connecting that way. But honestly, it's, as someone that's kind of awkward, like it's as simple as just like posting a couple comments, having a little bit of a conversation. And honestly, last night I was kind of like in my headspace and I reached out to another indie author who has just been like very incredible to me and sent her like a giant, I felt so bad after this, sorry Wit, thing. And she sent me a bunch of voice memos back, just kind of like, hey, let's talk through this. And aww, you literally can do that. Like you could go to anyone. I know some really, really big indie authors who have just recently gone to the trad space, talk about it on Threads. Like if you need advice, you can go to them. Like Penn Cole always posts about that. LJ Andrews always posts about that. And like, to me, those people are like gods. Like, oh, I can't reach out to them. Like they're the like elite of the elite. And really like, you can, they're just regular people. They were in our same shoes, you know, back in the day, and they still go through the same things. And, you know, to anyone listening to this, like I'm by no means a big author, but you can always come to me for advice. Like you can always, you know, message me if you need to spit things, you know, at the board or whatnot. But yeah, it's just kind of like taking that leap and then you end up making friends. So it's kind of a fun process.
Yeah. Ooh.
One more thing I would love as an early indie author, someone should really write a book about indie publishing.
Yes.
And just maybe have like a little bit of a guideline in there about what things you should be doing, what, you know, where to go for certain things. That'd be great.
I should, does anyone know of the books where it's like a how to blah, blah, blah for dummies? Like that,
yes.
That series, how to become an indie author for dummies. Like, and then
absolutely.
It has everything that you need in it. You
there
guys are looking for your next book.
Like that. You can get them free on Kindle Unlimited. On like how to market for indie authors. Some of them are great. Some of them are pretty lousy. But
yeah,
I did download a bunch of them and they helped me kind of with the timeline. So, you know, you need to create a website. You need to, this is how you do ARCs. Mm-hmm. This is how you, you know, post reels. This is how, what's a book trailer? Like all that kind of stuff. And so, like I said, some of them are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Incredible. But such good advice. I feel like I'm learning a whole new world that I never thought I would learn. Cause like I said, I'm not writing a book. None of that is happening. But like, I feel like as like a podcaster who talks to authors on a regular basis, it's so interesting to learn your guys' side of things and your guys' world and how the indie author world works. So this has been incredible. I do want to ask a couple more, two more questions, and then we have an announcement for everybody. So your guys' book dedication, I feel like that's such an important part of your book. Did you write that first? Did you write that last? Was it something that was important to you immediately? You were like, this is what it is? Or did you have to really think on it?
Sure.
Emily, do you want to go first?
I think I'm someone that writes their dedication first, which I think is generally, I don't know if that's, like, I think that's kind of weird. I wouldn't expect that. I write my acknowledgements last because those are really hard to write. But dedications, I think I always write first because it really sets the tone and the vibe mm-hmm. of what I'm going in to write. So my latest one for Swift is actually part of a quote from the first book. And it's, now I'm like nervous, I can't talk. Sorry guys. So it's to never feel shame over the pain that others inflict on you. The books really are like a healing journey for me, and we won't get into that because there's a lot of triggers and whatnot with it. But I think it was important for me as I was writing to know that like it's okay to express your feelings and it's okay to be upset about certain things, but that you can come out on the other side. And I really, that was a very popular quote. It's actually something I want as a tattoo for my first book that I then wanted to bring into this third one. So yeah, I guess I write them first from like a tone perspective, I guess.
Yeah, amazing. Kay, would you like to go next about your dedication? And if you have a quote too that you would like to let us know about that kind of is meaningful to you.
Well, I actually wrote my dedication last just because I wasn't entirely sure, like you said, the tone and the vibe of the entire book versus the series. And because my book is largely about a woman who's a caregiver and not knowing who she is beyond that, right? And I wrote it during my motherhood postpartum experience and just being a big sister and all of those wonderful things. So mine is to anyone who's ever lost themselves and loving other people. And that for me and for the main character of this book is just learning who we are beyond caregiving and motherhood and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think it resonated with a lot of the readers who are in that position right now, all the young mamas and big sisters out there, or, you know, mm-hmm. have grown kids, young kids. Yeah.
Finding yourself after you've had a baby is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my entire life. I'm like, what's my name? I don't know my name.
Yeah.
Who am I?
Do I like things or do I not like things?
Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
Exactly. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like I started this podcast when I was postpartum with my son. And so I feel like that was something that really helped me learn who I was again, right? As now a mom of two, like find something that I'm passionate about and able to do. like on my own time and really connect back with the world. Cause I think that, and I don't want to go like too much into postpartum because obviously like that's a whole nother thing. But everyone has such a different experience postpartum, and one of mine, and this is kind of like a personal, it's like I had a hard time going outside. Like with my son, like walking outside the front door was hard. I don't know why. Like I went outside before I had him, right? I worked all the way up until I had him. Like, but when I was holding him, I was like, it's hard to go. It's hard to walk outside the front door. So I love that dedication. I love that you put thought into other like mothers and, as you said, like big sisters throughout the world who are going to read that book. So that's, yeah. I think that will hit home for a lot of women out there.
I
Ms.
hope
Rebecca,
so.
That's how about you? What about your dedication? Tell us about it. And then again, if you have a quote as well that you would like to share.
Yeah, I wrote my dedication early in the writing process. It wasn't first, but it was pretty, I don't know. I was maybe 10,000 words in, 20,000 words in when I started thinking about it. And my dedication's to my husband. His belief in me and his support really, I think, made the book possible. And our love story, I think, is kind of threaded through the love story in the book. And so I felt like I needed to, you know, give some attention to him because he was so important, even though he's completely unseen in the journey. But he was vital to my journey. You know, I have a whole bunch of favorite quotes from the book, and most of them are spoilers. So I like try and stay away from them in podcasts.
Fair.
But there's one scene where my main character, Baird, tells Mira, you might not think that you love me, but you do. Deep down, the part of you who doesn't believe in things that are beyond belief, that part of you loves me and I can feel it. And that's the hope I'm holding on to. And like, I just thought that was a beautiful way for, you know, they always say, if you love something, set it free. I mean, in this part of the book, he's setting her free to go figure stuff out on her own.
Yeah.
And newsflash, she does. But she has to work through it on her own to be able to come back as a whole person, and then love him with that wholeness that I think you have to have a successful relationship. So that was an important, I think, scene in the book.
That's incredible. And I love that a lot of your quotes are, tell me about your plot, because like you said, they are kind of spoilers. They do give away a little bit. So that's interesting. And I love a supportive husband. Behind the scenes is my hubs, and he does so much for this podcast that any listener would have no idea at all. So thank you to all the husbands out there who are helping their partners become successful and do things that they love. So snaps for the hubbies out there.
My husband is currently upstairs wrangling my children.
Not the mine door was like frolicking in the background. I'm like, can you stop making noise? Like, you know I'm here. But he's building me bookshelves, so you know.
I relate to that also.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he gets a pass. There's a pass for that. Yes. Yeah. I try really hard now not to record on the weekends, but if I have to, I always feel bad because I'm like, can you take the kids out for just a couple hours? He did try to soundproof the door, but the kids are loud. He's like, I'm trying. I'm sorry. So yeah, they do a lot. Husbands do a lot. Like partners do a lot that a lot of people don't see. So thank you to all the partners and hubbies out there and wives out there who are helping indie authors and podcasters behind the scenes do the things that they love. This has been incredible. I feel like I have learned a lot. I hope that our listeners have learned a lot. So if you are a future indie author, if you're looking to write a book, this is where you get started. Community, connecting with each other, sitting down, writing things. Write 10,000 words and see how you feel afterwards. So that is incredible. One thing I want to announce before we log off is our giveaway. So in honor of the first episode of Indie Talk, all three of these lovely authors have agreed to do a giveaway of their books, which is amazing. So it's like a package bundle deal. You get your own little individual packages. You'll know that it's coming. It won't be a surprise, but it'll still be just as exciting. So this giveaway will start today on December 1st when our episode is dropping, and it will go until December 13th. So on December 13th, I will announce the winner. So you will get a Wrecking of Salt and Fire, A Memory Not Mine, and Beyond the Maples. The rules to the giveaway is you're going to go to my social media page or our social media page, The Goodish Girls. You're going to like the post. Make sure you're following The Goodish Girls and all three authors. So you want to follow Rebecca Byron, Kate Peach, and EK Kondos. And if you share the post, you will get extra entries. Don't worry, we'll be counting them. So this is going to be amazing. Thank you, ladies, for your time. I found this so, so helpful, and I hope that our listeners found this helpful as well. So again, guys, this is The Goodish Girls. Thank you guys for hanging out with us.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.